Hello, everyone. This is Dave Levinsky from GrowThink, and today I am very excited to interview Ed Pendarvis. Let me start by telling you a little bit about Ed's very impressive background. Around 30 years ago, Ed founded Sunbelt Business Brokers Network, which is a business brokerage firm. And for those of you that don't understand business brokerage, that means they help individuals and companies buy and sell businesses. Now, extremely impressively, Ed has grown Sunbelt into the world's largest business brokerage firm with approximately 300 licensed offices located throughout the world. And also, Ed has managed the sale himself of more than 1,000 businesses. In 2006, Sunbelt was acquired by Merry Meeting, Inc., and now Ed also runs Pendarvis Capital Group, which, among other things, provides business acquisition financing. And finally, Ed is the author of Buying a Business to Secure Your Financial Freedom, which was published by McGraw-Hill a few years ago. So Ed clearly has a ton of relevant experience with starting, growing, buying, and selling companies. And as a result, I thought he could be extremely helpful and extremely valuable to everyone listening in assisting them in learning about how to successfully grow a business and exit it. So Ed, once again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Dave, thank you for the opportunity. I always like to talk to folks about the possibility of going into business for themselves and providing for their own job security. And in today's market, in today's times, I believe that's the best way to provide for job security for yourself and your family is work for the man and the woman in the mirror. And that's what we try to help you do in buying an existing business that already has an established customer base and cash flow and trained employees and a product or service that the market has responded to, as opposed to a startup, perhaps that would be a little bit safer to buy an existing successful business. And it's oftentimes is, although it's a challenge to get financing for anything dealing with business at the present time, that may be the best opportunity there for a lot of reasons we'll talk about.
Excellent. So that actually you started to answer my first question, which is for an early stage entrepreneur, what should they be considering when determining whether to buy an existing business, franchise a business, or start a business from scratch? What are those key things that you think you should be looking at when making that determination?
Well, Dave, I'm a little bit prejudiced on that point, I'll have to tell you. Over the years, 30 years of selling businesses and things, there's a lot of advantages to going into business for yourself. And, of course, what you all do with GrowThink and helping folks put together a plan, oftentimes owning your own business has been called the American dream. But I always tell folks,
right,
you won't get there by dreaming. It's going to take a lot of
right,
heavy lifting and work. But it usually starts with a dream and a plan and what you want to do, and then there's always a good idea to start right there with laying out at least some plan of action or to get to your goal line. And your ultimate goal of owning your own business, quite frankly, is the same thing about getting a job. What you need out of a business, what you need out of a job is an income to provide for yourself
right,
and your family. We say, so if you've got those options, you can work for somebody else, you can work for yourself. I'm a big advocate of suggesting you look at the possibility of working for yourself. Now, that takes a good look in the mirror to start with about what your strengths are and your personal weaknesses and what you bring to the table. Then when you look into it, the options of either starting up a business or buying an existing business or buying a franchise, statistics are rather brutal on the startup side. I'll tell you, about 65 to 90% of the time, a startup business is not going to still be in business after 5 years. Now,
right,
there's some common sense reasons for that. And no matter what you start up, you have to get people to quit going wherever they've been going for that product or service in that community and come to your store. And, wow, that's going to be that's quite a load to get folks to quit doing what they've been doing and come to your business to buy that product or service. If you buy an existing successful business that already has trained employees, already has a customer base, and a cash flow sufficient to pay the expenses of the business and the operating costs of the business and provide the owner a living, and I usually define that by the fact that the business has been in operation 3 years or longer. I've found
okay,
over the years, if somebody's losing money, they won't stay in business 3 years. If they've been
got
there
it,
three years,
it.
12 years, 15 years, they're making a living out of that business, obviously. And
right.
So, and then a third area is a franchise. And the way the statistics
right.
work out, if you buy an existing successful business or a franchise, that's a successful franchise, 90 to 95% of the time you're still in business after 5 years. And of course that's a huge
wow.
turnaround of risk for the buyer.
Wow, so it's that high. If you buy a business or a franchise, your success is much, much higher.
Oh, it's a much better chance. Then when you look at it again, it's a common sense thing. It's like you take it over, and they already, the 12 employees show up tomorrow after you close and buy it, and they help run the equipment and run the business just like they've been doing. The customers
right.
that have been trading there for years come right on back. We usually, in selling a business, it's very confidential, and the world really doesn't even know the business has been transitioned, hopefully, until after the closing. And we introduce the buyer to the employees and to customers and vendors and things like that in a very specific and positive way. And usually a new buyer will jump a business a little bit that first year, just new enthusiasm and working a little bit harder, a little longer and things like that, and based on what they add to the program. That's, again, that's why that business plan is so important, to look at not just what the seller's been doing, but what you as a new owner would do after you take over the business.
What do you think some of the keys are for the new owner to manage the business, to make sure that the, you know, the employees are motivated and that the company runs successfully after the, you know, the transition has taken place?
Again, I'm going to compliment GrowthInc on what y'all are doing there. If you look at what you would want if you were an employee, when a new owner takes over, if you'll incorporate those new employees in your business plan some and allow them to participate some in the upside of success, you'll be amazed how much they'll get on board and help you. Oftentimes, somebody's been there 15, 17, 20 years, they get kind of mired down, and they're not going to continue to do any raises or bonuses or anything like that beyond kind of what they do. They don't have incentive programs and things built in, and that's one of the wonderful things a new owner-manager can bring to the table, is to develop some plans that going forward to grow the business and allow the employees to share some in the upside of that business improvement. And that's a good, positive way to get everybody on the team and getting the team headed in the same direction.
That's a great idea.
One or two things I do, I call them some arrows in my quiver, just some experience factors. Usually nobody knows more about a business than the present owner that's been running it for years.
Right.
When I'm taking a listing and when I'm dealing with a buyer and seller, I always ask a seller after I get to know them a little bit. And this business brokerage, unlike real estate, is a relationship business. You need to get to know the seller, get to know their business, why they're selling, what their motivation is, good points of the business, bad points of the business, and possible improvements. Same thing with the buyer. You need to get to know the buyer, build a relationship with the buyer, an honest relationship with the buyer and seller, and between buyer and seller. Because unlike real estate, where you just buy a house and buy and sell and never see each other again, and buying a business, that seller is going to teach you how to run the business and may very well help finance it for you if you build a good relationship with them. And we'll talk about financing in just a minute. But one thing I always ask a seller is, Mr. Seller, if you were just starting over and money wasn't a total issue, what two or three or four things would you do to improve the business? And you'd be amazed at the gold nuggets they'll give you as, well, if I was just starting over and I'd do this, I'd stay open on Saturdays, I'd stay open on Sundays, I'd stay open longer, I'd advertise more, I'd put in a drive-thru, I'd add this to the menu, I'd take out delivery. And it's amazing the things that they say. And, of course, your first thought is, well, why doesn't he do that? And he's, man, I've been doing this for years. I like to play golf with my friends on Saturdays. You see what I mean?
Right.
Or whatever. And they don't make those changes, but they know many times some changes that would make a difference. I call them little course corrections that can pick up another 2% or 3% or 4%. Next thing you know, you're picking up 10 and 15% in the business. And that helps the buyer kind of also look at it with a fresh approach to how to grow the business and go forward. And, again, their planning should be not just on what the seller has already done with the business, but what they plan to do with it after they take over. And that's
Got
an
it.
Important part of planning going forward, too.
Excellent. Now, you start talking about financing, you know, with the seller providing financing. Where does one go if they are looking to buy an existing business?
Well, now, when I got into the business almost 30 years ago, we never even thought about going to the bank because banks have a tough time. You have to understand their approach to it. They're usually asset-based lenders, and they like to have enough security, and a bank defines security in the worst-case scenario. What assets could we seize, take back to the market in 30 to 60 days, and get our money back? And usually that's always been like real estate or a house. If we foreclose on that, we could get our money back. We found in today's market that may not be so. But I will tell you that seizing the assets of an operating business, like the furniture, fixing equipment, the stainless steel equipment in a restaurant and things, and a lot of equipment in a dry cleaners or something there, if you foreclose on that business, chances of getting your money back out of the used equipment is almost zero because you close the doors on an operating business. The actual value of the business, which was the customer base, the cash flow, the trained employees, and the furniture, fixing equipment, the operating business that was an economic entity that produced income, is gone. And so normally don't have security in a business loan. And so that's a tough thing to get by. A lot of people see an ad and somebody says, we the small business lender, and they go talk to those folks thinking they're going to make a loan, and oftentimes they don't because the bank just doesn't have security and they don't have proven debt repayment ability. Most of the financials in an ongoing business, this is a real challenge, are done to minimize taxes. And so oftentimes the operating business will not show enough net profit after taxes to repay a bank loan and for the owner to make a living, although the present owner is making a living. So we have to recast those numbers to show the actual cash flow. But it's challenging for a bank. So what we found, about 70% of small business sales are financed by the seller. And when you look at the two reasons a bank won't make a loan, usually they don't have security and they don't have proven debt repayment ability. Quite frankly, the seller is the solution to that because the seller's in an actual secure position. If he'd been running that hardware store for 15 years and he lent you part of the money, if you didn't pay him, unlike the bank that would foreclose and lose everything, he could take the business back over and run it. He knows how to run it. Certainly doesn't want to, but he could. So he's in a more secure position. And then when it comes to the real cash flow of the business, goodness, who knows more about the actual cash flow of the business? I don't care what the tax returns show. Then the seller. So the very fact that he'll lend you the money, or sometimes that he won't lend you the money, probably tells you more about the value of the business than anything else. But most of the time, a good business broker will put some financing together between the buyer and the seller. And it helps the buyer have a comfort level at what the seller's telling him about the business, and his warranties and representations are true and accurate.
Got it. And now that other 30% of the financing, is that something that the entrepreneur, the buyer, has to put together on their own?
Usually average size of a small business is probably between $300,000 and $400,000, and most of our buyers have $50,000 to $100,000, what I call hip national bank, Dave. That's how much you can write a check for. And that's the entire life savings. I mean, it's a 100% commitment from the buyer, almost no matter what the size of the down payment. But usually the down payment's probably 25% to 50% of the purchase price of the business. And then somebody's got to finance the balance. Now, the SBA has been rather aggressive until this past year when, as Warren Buffett said, things fell off a cliff. And they've come back. But most even SBA loans are actually made to folks that are already clients of the bank. They're not made to people acquiring businesses, you see. And so it's a little bit deceptive. 80% of SBA loans are made to folks that are already in business. If you saw information on CIT, most of their business was actually factoring with existing clients that they had, you see. And they call those small business loans. And they are.
Right.
But they aren't what we call small business acquisition loans, which were from the brokerage community. So that's a challenge. But the 7A loan is probably the best program they have. And right now they lend in from 70 to 90% on a guarantee. If you can meet the criteria, which would be the security there and there's proven debt repayment ability. And also they're looking pretty hard at the buyer fit, you might call it, that the buyer seems to have a pretty good chance that either they have industry experience or management experience that the lender's comfortable they can run that business or continue to run that business successfully.
Got it. Excellent.
Now, financing is always a challenge with small business. In fact, most transactions probably would end up about a third down by the buyer, perhaps a third down by a third-party lender, SBA or bank lender of some sort, and then a third by the seller. And that's somewhat of a normal transaction. Other than that, it's how much the buyer can put down, and the seller does finance the balance for 5, 7, 10 years, probably 6 or 7% interest.
Got it. Now, what should the buyer be looking for? You know, if I'm the entrepreneur saying, okay, I'm convinced that I probably shouldn't start my own business. You know, you talk about the advantages of an existing business. What should I be looking for? Obviously, one thing you said and I highlighted in my notes was that being around for 3 years or longer. What else should I be looking for in a good business to buy?
The biggest thing I would start off with is looking for a business that you like and feel that you can manage. I will tell you, I've seen successful businesses and retail businesses, service business, restaurants, manufacturing, distribution, you name it, convenience store. So what a good business is, what's a good business for you? Because I will tell you, if you hate to get up and go to work every day, you got a problem. I don't care what kind of business it is.
Right.
One of the biggest things to do, I think, in making a decision is just like when you were buying a house, you looked at a lot of different houses and you settled on one particular house. It's somewhat of a subconscious process of elimination, I call it.
Right.
Buying a car, the same thing. You look at a lot of different cars, a lot of different models, a lot of different colors, features, and you, for whatever reason, you decide on this one. I do the exact same thing with a business. I'd go to a business broker that I feel comfortable with, and I'm a big advocate of brokers because they have businesses listed. They know which businesses are for sale, and their job is to help put a deal together that works for the buyer and seller. Now,
right.
I will say a business broker normally works for the seller. But I'll tell you this, if a buyer doesn't buy the business, the seller can't sell it. So we certainly
right.
never work against the buyer. We work to put a deal together that works both the buyer and the seller.
We've right.
got a chance of closing. But let the broker show you several opportunities in business that may fit your down payment criteria and the cash flow that you need to make out of a business, because that's a major criteria. You've got to have enough income to pay the debt service on the business and make a living.
Right.
But it also needs to be a business that you feel comfortable, that you can run and manage, and that you would look forward to spending 7, 8, 10, 12 hours, 15 hours a day, as it may require at certain times, to run that business.
Right.
Most folks are going to work harder working for themselves than they do working in a job. But that's all right. You're building a business for yourself.
Right. Agreed. Excellent. So let's turn around a little bit and talk about I either bought a business or I have my own business and I'm starting to grow it. What should I be doing as the owner entrepreneur of my business so that it is as sellable as possible? What systems in place do I have to put in place? What do I have to do with my customers? How do I grow a business so that everyone wants to buy it at the highest possible price?
I think there are two or three issues there that are right important. One is having a business that shows well as far as the product or service and has employees that are well trained. And so when a customer comes in, the customer experience is positive in dealing with that company and with that business.
Okay.
I always say, and as far as your financials are concerned, the trend is your friend. Now, obviously, most businesses had a slowdown this past year. I think that would be normal, and I think the market expects that and understands that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you were McDonald's or Walmart, everybody else had a slowdown.
Right.
And in that reality, though, somebody's got to see enough money there to make a living and pay the debt service. Because that's an absolute requirement of a business. I mean, if I put my life savings in this, I got to be able to make a living doing it.
Right.
And as far as the seller preparing the business for sale, it would be a good idea to keep your financial records in where they're complete and accurate and correct. Now, they still are done with a skew to minimize taxes. I think the buying public understands that, or certainly the broker's job is going to help them to understand that. Mm-hmm. So what you want to know in looking at a business, whereas the financial is important, the real question you have as a buyer mm-hmm. is, if I buy this business, if I buy this job, how much can I make? And
right.
the answer to that starts with how much the seller's making, less the debt service, plus what the buyer is going to do to improve the business. And that's where the business plan is so important to the buyer going forward, building on what's already there. But the seller in preparing the business for sale, the better he keeps or she keeps her records, so that the buyer is comfortable that the main thing is, I can make a living here if I buy this business.
Right.
And so I think keeping good records is probably a key issue to that. And then running the business as though you were not selling it, but continuing to grow it. Everybody wants to grow. I think that's just, I mean, the Lord's got that built in even when we're born. My little grandson keeps measuring himself. Well, it's not like grown, you know.
Right.
Everybody wants to grow. People want to grow as human beings. We want to grow in knowledge and education. We want to grow in relationships. I want to grow spiritually, physically, mentally, and all that. And not surprisingly, you want to grow a business. And
right.
Here's one huge advantage to owning your own business. Wherever you start with that and grow it, you grow in a tremendous value and equity to the owner of the business. And you don't have to pay taxes on it until you when you sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And most every big business started off as a small business.
Right.
If you look at Bill Gates, you look at any of these, but McDonald's, any big business, Coca-Cola started off as a small business, ended up being a huge business with a lot of hard work and heavy lifting, and maybe the Lord's helped some.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about traditional metrics, such as having a larger customer base versus just having a few customers paying a lot of money and lifetime value of customers? How closely do a lot of buyers look at metrics such as that?
I think it can be real important in certain businesses. In other words, we look for it's normally better that no one customer does more than 6, 7, maybe 10% of the business of that business. If you get to where you get above that, on the one hand, it's good because you only got to keep one guy happy. On the bad side, if you lose that guy, you just lost 40% of your business or whatever the number is.
Right.
And so usually having a broader customer base is a good idea. There's no question that technology has changed the metrics of what we're doing now. We'll look at a business and speaking as it was earlier about how could you improve a business. One of the first questions we'd ask if we didn't already see it is, do you have a website? And it's amazing how many small businesses still may not have a website. Or if they do, it's not a real driver, it's not a value driver the way it should be. And oftentimes
right.
the new buyer can come in and really add substantially to the business and the availability of the customer base by going online with some of their either product or services. That's an exciting part of the marketplace now. In some businesses, obviously, it's more applicable than others. But it has an application to most every business because the buying public is getting used to getting their information and oftentimes getting their product and services over the Internet.
Agreed. Now, in doing what you've done for many, many years, you've probably worked with more entrepreneurs and business owners, than probably anyone I've ever spoken to. And you've probably seen a lot of them succeed and a lot of them, not succeed. And I was wondering if any sort of traits of the successful business owners and entrepreneurs have stood out to you that you could talk about.
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is a willingness to work hard. And the market has kind of taken care of that a little bit. We're not normally dealing with a foolish seller, and we're not normally dealing with a foolish buyer, nor do we want to be. And you'll find that the process works because the seller wants to get as much as they can for the value of the business that they've built up, and that's certainly not surprising. And the buyer, who is risking his life savings in buying, is going to be a pretty prudent decision maker and go through his due diligence process, or her due diligence process, pretty thoroughly in making this judgment to buy this business, and, of course, the seller to sell the business. And if the seller's going to lend the buyer some money, they've both got a vested interest in the go-forward success of the business. And I think that's an important thing. I think probably one of the biggest things that I think is different than, say, real estate brokerage and business brokerage goes back to building relationships between the broker and the seller, of course, the broker and the buyer and seller, that survives closing. And when you look at it, actually, when somebody closes on a business, it's kind of like a commencement. I call it a graduation. This deal isn't over.
Right.
The deal just started. And the buyer takes over management and kind of goes from there. And I will tell you that less than probably 5 to 6% of transactions we've put together over the years have not worked. And, of course, that mirrors kind of even the SBA's loss factor most of the time over the years is somewhere around about 4 to 5%. And I think because of that, it's such a huge investment from the buyer's standpoint, and the seller's built up a successful business. It's already successful in running, and if you just run it like they run it and then build on that and use your learned and God-given talents to add value to it, it normally is going to work. And so that's proven to be a good thing.
Excellent. I mean, what you're saying, it's really interesting because, you know, you talk about the willingness to work hard, which I totally agree with. And you talk about the buyer risking their life savings. And when you talk about that, you're really saying, you know, failure is not an option. And because of that, they're going to work hard and succeed. But the other thing you're saying is that not only does the buyer have a vested interest, but when you do seller financing, the seller has a vested interest because they're not going to get their money unless the business succeeds. And as a result, I'm thinking here now that if I'm buying a business, that seller financing, I would think, should be a definite. I should definitely request and require that. Do you agree with that?
In my book that I wrote, and some of my brokers got upset about it, I said I wouldn't buy a business unless I saw the finance part of it.
Right.
Now, here's why that is. It's not that it's just that it's a good affirmation, you might say, of the seller's belief that the business is a successful business, and I'm going to sell it to you, I'm selling it to you at a fair price, I'm going to help you run it, and I want you to pay me the rest of that money. And both buyer and seller leave that closing with a vested interest in the continued success of that business. And that's a huge difference, again, than real estate, where, you know, we go to the closing and hand the keys and see you, and of course you'll never see
them
again.
Right, it's over, yeah.
You're buying just property. You're buying a business. You're buying an ongoing economic entity that requires management to bring it to where it is now, and it requires good management to take it to the level that you want to go to. And that means a business plan, of course, and then that means executing the plan. And it means commitment. I always, one of the reasons I can usually get a seller to finance somebody a little bit is I say, I can tell you this, you're going to get paid because this person is investing such a huge amount of their life savings that they're going to get up and go to work every day. You see what? So if you teach them how to do it and how to run this business and run it well, that's going to be a good, safe investment for you. And Mr. Seller, where else could you get 6 or 7% on a secured note on your money in today's world, you see? And so it's a good deal usually for the seller and for the buyer.
Got it. That's great. The next question I had to do with when you were, starting Sunbelt and you took the company and you grew it to, hundreds of offices, and now you're dealing with individuals and offices that you're not able to see every day, and I would assume it had to be a bit nerve-wracking that you lose a bit of control. And I was wondering if you have any advice in terms of any systems that you set up and how you manage a rapidly growing organization, particularly where you cannot see operations every day.
That's a good question. I will tell you, I'm not a real good high-tech person. I'm more of a high-touch person, I guess, as Naismith said. And the way we grew Sunbelt, quite frankly, is I went somewhere every week for 16 years. I went somewhere every week for a couple of days and trained brokers. And there's about 12 major cities in the United States. You go to Atlanta, Orlando, or Dallas, or Los Angeles, or San Francisco, or New York, Chicago, around Washington. And you're back around the country every 90 days. And we did that. I did that for 16 years. And
wow.
It gave me a wonderful chance, though, to meet the brokers and know who I'm dealing with, who's on the other end of the telephone. And the feedback that I got, and I know you do this, but when you training people and educating folks, quite frankly, you learn more sometimes than they do.
Right.
And one of the things that really helped me is the interaction with the 12 to 15 people I was training every week for two or three days. That I got to know them, and they got to know me a little bit. And, gosh, a lot of these folks are MBA people and executives of companies and vice president of companies and CEOs, or folks that have sold businesses or bought businesses. And I learned an awful lot, there's no question about it. And that kind of kept my juices flowing, I guess you'd say, because always seeing new people and growing. And the Lord's blessed us. We just kept doing that, and after a certain number of years, we ended up all of a sudden we're the largest business broker network in the world.
Right.
And we've got a lot of wonderful folks that have come in with us, but I believe I've learned a lot more from them than they have from me.
Excellent. And how do you get that comfort level that they were doing, you know, they were representing the brand and the company well? It's just that you met them, you had that gut feeling, or did you train them in a certain way that you felt comfortable that they were representing?
A little bit of both of those. I think I would have had a difficult time just dealing with people long distance and technology. I overcame that, you might say, by literally I trained everybody that came in with us initially. And getting to know those folks and them getting to know me personally probably helped us. No question it helped me. Whereas I don't believe I would have had that success if I was just on the other end of a computer or other end of a telephone and things there. And now, though, with technology improving, like using Skype or some things like that, I found
right.
that you can have you can build an actual relationship with somebody long distance, and that's one of the amazing things about technology once old folks like me catch up with it.
That's great. What about personal productivity and goal setting? Are you somebody that now, or as you were building the company, was big on, you know, daily goals, weekly goals, monthly goals, to-do lists, setting, you know, stretch goals? How do you operate to make sure that you accomplish everything that you set out to do?
I'm a big-time goal setter, and I think the whole idea that y'all do with a plan, I mean, you got to have a plan, and you got to execute your plan. And
right.
You've got to set some goals for yourself so that you can both kind of monitor where you are and see what you need to do to change. I call it course corrections to accomplish what you need to do. You can take almost any business and say, okay, if you want to get here, that's great, but as I would say, dreaming doesn't get you. You want to dream to get there, but dreaming
right.
doesn't get you there. What specific things are you going to do to get to that goal? And then you have to hold yourself accountable to that. Can't do this anymore, but I used to literally pass around a little hand mirror when I'd go around in my broker meeting and say, how much time do you spend, look in the mirror there and tell that guy in the mirror, how much time you spent honestly trying to get a listing next week, last week, or dealing with buyers or sellers. And
right.
invariably they'd look at me and start asking, oh, doesn't matter what you tell me, just don't not lie to that person in the mirror right there. And
right.
if you'll spend the time doing the things you need to do, you'll find that this business works, and that's no matter what business it is. You see what I mean? If you learn the way the business works, and that's one advantage, again, of buying an existing business. All a franchise is successful. You're in business, the old saying, you're in business for yourself but not by yourself. Somebody has got to teach you how to run that business, so your learning curve as far as getting up to speed on that business is very quick. You do that by buying a franchise that knows more about that franchise than anyone else in the world, and they're going to teach you. They've got a training program and things like that. Certainly we have that with Sunbelt. But every franchise system has that. And then additionally, though, in buying an existing business, it's not a franchise. you got the seller who knows more about that business than anyone else in the world that's going to teach you how to run it and ramp you up there, and has got a vested interest in making sure you do it right. You got a much better chance of success. And again, there's some reason, there's many reasons for that continued success rather than just a startup, and that's the advantages, I think, some of them.
Excellent. Excellent. Ed, I have one final question for you, which are, you know, what else I forgot to ask you, which you think would be very helpful to an entrepreneur or business owner that is trying to grow their business? What other pieces of valuable information and insight have you learned over the years that you think could help for an entrepreneur looking to grow their business?
I think the biggest thing is always keep an eye on your competition and learn from them, not necessarily worry about them, but learn from them. And very importantly, learn from your customers and your employees. They are wonderful assets to a business. And if you ask them for feedback on your product or service and let them guide you, you'll find an awful lot of things that can help you run your business better. There's no substitute for hard work. I think that's important, hard and focused work. But you'll find if you'll incorporate others to help you, and if you'll do a plan and keep updating that plan, I think that's important. I also think there's no doubt about it. It's important to write things down so that and hold yourself accountable. Because at the end of the day, it's your business and your family living that you're trying to make out of that business. So it's up to you, certainly with the Lord's help and with the help of a lot of other folks. But you're the quarterback, and you're the one that's got to make it happen. So you need to have a benchmark on where you are and making sure you're staying on track to get that goal done.
Excellent. Ed, I think that this was extremely helpful. I just know that I just took a lot of notes, and I learned a lot. I think that everyone else that listens to this interview is going to get a ton of value out of it, and hopefully they are going to start or buy a business, and they're going to learn from the seller, they're going to work hard and set goals, everything that you've been talking about, and they could follow your advice and, like, well, you know, grow a successful company. So I really appreciate your time, Ed.
Listen, I appreciate this. I'll tell you this, you'll end up with this is you can help somebody do three things, perhaps. One is they got a job for life if they buy their own business. Number two, they got an opportunity to grow a bigger business. Most every big business started off as a small business. And number three, you're growing equity in something you have to sell if you ever wish to when you go to retire or something. Can't sell your job, but you can sell your business. Yeah. Thank you so much for all y'all do. You are really helping businesses with the planning process with GrowThink, and y'all are continuously on the cutting edge of that business, and I congratulate you.
Great. You too, Ed. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.